Thanks for listening to The Rivers Podcast. For more information on this teaching, visit our website at theriver.info.
Are we ready to go into a new series of the day? Ask your neighbor, are you ready? Now ask him, are you ready? Yeah. Are you ready? Because last month, the series was crossover, where I talked about, you know, a change of direction, and I sensed the disturbance in the force, so to speak, where I sensed that God was telling us to maybe just change things up, and we didn't really know exactly what that meant, and so we began praying Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I've mentioned this. Please come join us. Put your request in. And I told you that in that series, a couple things. I didn't want to exhaust you, and that's true for this new series, which you have yet to see the title of. I don't want to exhaust you during this 7-week series that we're starting today. I don't want you to leave here feeling, oh goodness, church is just tiring. I go in and they give me a list of to-dos. I ain't doing that. So turn to your neighbor and say, he ain't doing that. You all have bad grammar. And then secondly, in addition to not wanting to exhaust you, I don't want to let you settle. And I don't want to settle. Now, if you're new to the church and you're visiting for the first time, you can just relax. And if you've not said yes to Jesus, you're still on this faith journey checking things out, that's cool. But if you're a part of the family of believers, I'm talking to you, I don't want you to settle. Because there's too much blessings to flow through you that won't happen if you and if we settle in our faith. And so I think the Lord has more for us. So we're not going to exhaust one another, and yet we're not going to allow each other to settle, because there's more in store. Turn to your neighbor and say, there's more in store. There is more in store. And so we've had a new series, and it begins today. And the series title is, I'm going to have you say it a little bit, because you know it helps you remember when you repeat these things. The new series for the next 7 weeks is, you got to say no to grow. Turn to your neighbor and say no to grow. Now, there's something that title of this series is predicated on, and that is the fact that the whole notion of growing is a good thing. Let me be the first to tell you that growing hair is beautiful. And the lack of the ability to grow hair is, well, it's a bit of a disappointment for some that we have to deal with. Growing is good, whether you're in the church, out of the church, doesn't matter. Growing is good. If you're a horticulturalist, you want your plants to grow. Right. If you're the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, you want your people to grow. Growth is good. And the imagery that we have used here is that we want us to enter into a discipleship phase. Now, to be a disciple of Jesus is simply to be a follower of his, to learn his teachings and to be like him, to look like him. And so we use such imagery like this. Some of you are new to the faith, and so we liken ourselves then to disciples, to followers who are kind of like seeds. That's a seed kind of thing right there. We're seeds in the faith, and all seeds, for them to be effective, must do what? Grow. And so we're using this imagery, and we want seeds, people who are newish to the faith, to become roots in the faith. Oh, look at that. You're all happy. My battery's dying on my pointer, because it's annoying half of you. We want seeds to become roots, and roots, in order for them to support future growth, what do the roots need to do deep? They need to grow deep so that eventually the roots can become a tree that grow up high and reach out to the Lord and reach out to others. The concept here is growth, and so what I want to do with you for the next 7 weeks is encourage all of us to say no so that we can grow. And to get at that, I want to look at an Old Testament passage from the book of Joshua. And to get at that passage, it's kind of complicated. Let me explain a little bit before I get to Joshua. The Israelites had once been captive as slaves under Pharaoh back in Egypt. Does anybody know how many years they were in captivity and made slaves? Anybody? Who said 400? You get the prize, which is everything in my pocket. Which is the candy you gave me when you walked in. Congratulations. Congratulations, you win. For 400, she gives me candy every single Sunday, and it's only right that I gave it back one time. For 400 years, the Israelites were in slavery. Now, the parallel for us is there are things that keep us in bondage and in slavery, right? For addictions, right? And for depression, right? And sometimes unemployment and things just aren't going our way. So for us, the parallel is stuff that keeps us from experiencing the fullness of freedom that God has for us. The Israelites were enslaved for 400 years. They got out of captivity. The Lord, through miraculous events, you can read this in the book of Exodus, God came down and did many, many awesome miracles to convince Pharaoh to let them go, some miracles, signs, and wonders, and the people eventually walked into freedom. But the people, once they got into freedom, I wonder if this sounds like any of you, once they got to this land of freedom, they didn't know what to do with themselves. We're free. So they began to grumble, and they began to remember, quote unquote, the good old days when they had everything laid out for them and they didn't have to wander around saying, what are we going to do? So they actually began to say, well, we kind of missed those days where everything was scheduled and structured and we knew all the answers and we didn't have to wonder what was going to happen. And so they began to grumble and think of the old days. And so God said, all right, well, here's the deal. I want to give you 40 more years to just kind of wander around and experience what you want. You know, I've got this awesome blessing for you, but if you don't want it, I'm going to give you 40 years of what you want, and we're going to see if the 40 years of what you want is better than the freedom I have for you. Do you think at the end of the 40 years, they're like, yeah, our way's better than God's way? Do you think that's what they're saying? Not at all. Now, aren't they stupid? Because none of us would ever do that. None of us would ever presume to go our own way instead of the way of the Lord, right? None of us would ever do such a thing because we're way smarter than them dumb Israelites of the Old Testament, right? Somebody shake your head and just say, them is dumb people. Well, I'm being facetious because we do the same thing. Like them, we at times turn our back on what we know we're supposed to do. And that's for those of you who are believers or not believers, people who follow Jesus or don't. We all have an innate sense of right and wrong and what, you know, ought to happen. And many times we turn our back on that which we know we should do, like the Israelites. But praise God, and I mean that, praise God that he is merciful, right? Because if God was like me, he would say to these Israelites, you're all a bunch of stupid morons. Here I am, I set you free from captivity. I did all these miracles, and you're grumbling and complaining. Fine, you're stuck there forever. See you later. I'm going to go somewhere else and find somebody else. But God is not that way. God is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, rich in love. And so they got their stuff kind of together. The Lord let them have their way for a little bit, and they came back to him. And then the Lord said, okay, now I want to bring you into the promised land. And the promised land was a place where everything was good. The blessings of the abundance of the Lord were multitudinal, right? Their needs would be met. They'd have more than they would need so that they could give to others around them. And the Lord said, now you can go into the promised land. The people were ready. But before they crossed into the promised land, the Lord had a word or two for them. Now we're looking at the book of Joshua. It's on the screen, I believe. Joshua 3, there you go. Joshua told the people. Joshua's the leader of the Israelites. You need to know this. He's the one who's leading God's people into the promised land. So Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. Now let me stop right there. That's verse 5. Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord's going to do amazing things. There's a couple things that I want to uphold out of that first little verse right there. Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. God loves to do amazing things. See, some of us have become bored in our faith over the years because we've kind of fallen into the trap that God is ho-hum. God is just kind of, you know, and maybe like Santa, he shows up once a year with something nice, but for the most part, God is just kind of boring. What was true then is true today. God loves to do amazing things. Would you turn to your neighbor and with your friendly finger, keep your driving finger in your pocket, with your friendly finger say he wants to do something amazing. It's true. He loves to bring amazing blessings and promises to his people. He really does. It's right there in the text. You see, because here's this. Listen, y'all listening? God's not a grumpy boss who's missing his coffee in the morning, who's ready to smite you whenever you do something stupid. God is a merciful father who loves his kids And God, get this one, doesn't really want from you. He wants for you. This is who God is. You see, and sometimes Christian people like me, we've been stupid. Our issues have gotten the best of us, and we've portrayed the God of the Scriptures as an angry God who's ready to smack down everybody. But I'm telling you, this isn't the truth. Even in the Old Testament, God is revealed as a God who wants something for his people. He doesn't want from his people. He wants for his people. So whenever you see God asking anything from his people, it's because he's got great blessings for his people. He wants to do something amazing to you. But he wants to do something amazing. Did y'all get that point? That this is who he is. And there are people in your world who don't know the amazingness of God and the amazing things he wants to give to you. So maybe your job is to be the amazing conduit for the amazing blessings of the Lord, because he wants to do something amazing. Now, you will note, though, that that's the second thing that that first verse says. Before the amazing things are promised, something has to happen. What is it? Look right there. What do the people have to do? They got to consecrate themselves. Now, if you were to go to biblos.com, you were to tap on the word consecrate, you would see that tag number 314, parent needs to go get your child. Oh, that's awkward. I'll tell you what. Here's what we'll do. If you're listening online, you have no idea what's happening. Everybody, look over there real quick. Go, get your kid. Sneak out. Oh, go get, yes. I meant to say, look over this direction. To consecrate yourselves, if you were to tap on it on biblos.com, you were to see that the ancient language behind the word consecrate is a Hebrew word, kadesh. Could you say kadesh? A kadesh, to consecrate. As I looked it up in the Hebrew language on biblos.com, you can too. You don't need a degree to do that. You just have to have a computer and the internet, right? To click on that, you would see that the word consecrate means to set apart. It has the sense that you once were a part of a group, all the same. But to consecrate means to remove yourself from everything else and go over here and be different. It has the sense to say no to the old things so that you can walk into new things. To consecrate yourselves, the Lord is saying, say no so that you can, you got it, Gavin. Say that again. To consecrate yourselves is to say no to the old things so that you can what? Grow. You see, the Lord has amazing things for us. But in order for us to be in a place to receive the amazing things, we have got to set ourselves apart so that we can receive that which he has for us. We've got to say no to the things of old so that we can grow into the new things. You see, I already mentioned the history here is the people had walked into freedom, but freedom was scary for them, so they began to grumble and want the old. They see, sometimes even the stuff that was holding us in captivity, because it's familiar and it's quote-unquote safe, we want to go back to it. And so we run back to the old mistakes that we used to make, right? And I know you've said this before. I've asked you the things that you've said, I'm never going to do that again, right? How many of you said, I'm never doing that again? And then you go do that again. See, those are the things that the Lord wants us to say no to. And I'll tell you what, it's easy for me to stand up here and say, you got to say no to grow. That sounds nice, doesn't it? But my word, it's hard to do that. But to consecrate ourselves is to say no to the old ways so that we can grow into the blessings that the Lord has to us. And I'm wondering, as I look out over this room, what you need to say no to so that you can grow into the person that God would have for you to be. Consecrate yourselves. For tomorrow, the Lord's going to do amazing things for you. Today is the day of consecration, and tomorrow's the day of blessing. We'll say that again. It's just right out of verse 5. Today is the day of consecration because tomorrow's the day of blessing. And I really am wondering, what do you need to say no to so that you can grow into? Now, if I was a father and maybe had 5 children ranging from 8 to 18, I might, tonight after the Super Bowl, I might say, hey, kids, What do you think you need to say no to so that you could grow into? And I might, if I was a parent of five kids, ages 8 to 18, I might even say, well, here's some of the things I've been kicking around that I need to say no to so that you could see your dad grow into. This is a good thing to do for parents. And if I was just a man myself and, you know, not even thinking of my family, if I was a man and you know, had a Monday coming up, I might even on Monday say to myself, alone, apart from my kids, you know, what do I need to say no to so that I could grow into what the Lord would have me to be? See, this is right where it all begins. It's called reflection, internal, you know, looking and self-evaluation, self-awareness. And I'm wondering, I really am wondering, what do you need to say no to so that you can grow into what the Lord would have you become? So I know what you're thinking. You're thinking it's 4 after and we're only 1 verse in. You ready to do this a little faster? No? Okay, I can go slow. If you're not ready to go faster, I mean, okay, stretch it out a little bit because we gotta turn it up a little bit. Here we go. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant. Now, I've told you this before. If you've seen Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know what we're talking about, right? You know if you opened it, you would melt like wax, right? So you don't want to do that. No. So what you need to really know is that Indiana Jones was looking for something that was actually biblical, but the Ark of the Covenant wasn't this hocus-pocus magic thing. In the Old Testament, it was the center of God's presence on earth. You need to know that. The Ark of the Covenant was the place where God put his presence. In the New Testament, when Jesus went to the cross and defeated death by coming out of the tomb, his presence exploded out of that place and exists everywhere. And anyone who calls on the name of the Lord who will be saved has the Spirit of God within them. But in this day and age, the Spirit of the presence of the Lord was on the Ark of the Covenant. So tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's water, go stand in the river. It's the Jordan River. So I got a picture of the Jordan River. It's right here. Boom. That's my friend Dan. Looks kind of funny, doesn't he? Daniel used to be a pastor in town, and then he was, you know, doing a different thing for a bit, so he's a part of this church for a little bit. Does anybody know who Daniel Tierman is? He came here for about a year. Now he's a pastor out in California, and he also leads trips to Israel that my wife Christy and I and Rod and Anna got to go to one of these trips a couple summers ago. And that is the Jordan River. And Rod and I were talking this week, because Rod and I, you can actually see Rod's nice full head of hair right there. Mildly jealous. That's okay. And there's his wife, Anna, down in the front. We were talking about, you know, it seems like it's a big deal in the Bible when the people cross the Jordan River, this Joshua chapter 3. And Rod said to me this week, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, look at that. You could almost, with a running start, jump across the Jordan. And, I mean, it kind of looks like it's flowing, but come on, I mean, you could probably walk across that. So what's the big deal about crossing the Jordan? Well, is Rod in here right now, or did he sneak out? Okay. You could tell Roddy was a little big for his britches. Because I found this online this week, too. I did a little historical research. In 1964, a gigantic dam was built where upwards to 70% of the water of the Jordan River is now diverted to go to irrigation of farmland. And so what we see in the Jordan today is not what the Israelites saw in the Jordan yesterday, years and years ago. 70% of the water is gone. We actually will read in a minute that when the Israelites were crossing this Jordan, it was at flood stage. And at flood stage, right by the Jericho, where the people were crossing, the water could be up to 10 feet deep. Now, here's the deal. You might not know this, but the YMCA was not created back in the day of the ancient Hebrews. Did you know that? You're welcome. That's a historical fact for you. Therefore, they couldn't just go to the local YMCA and get swimming lessons. So historical anthropologists, people who study human culture, study people groups, will tell us that the Israelites, that's the old Hebrew people, the people of God throughout the Old Testament, they didn't know how to swim. Now, if you're 5 feet five or 6 feet five, 10 feet deep is over your head. And if you can't swim, that's uncrossable. Now, because it was at flood stage, which we're going to see that in a minute in the text, and because there wasn't a dam, you know, diverting 70% of the water, ancient Historians tell us that the Jordan River at flood stage by the Jericho, where the people of Israel are crossing, in our text, it was 14 miles wide. 14 miles wide. Repeat after me. Holy cow. That's amazing. So when Rod and I are getting a little cocky, thinking, I could jump that, you know, or I could easily walk across it. That's not what the Israelites' experience was when they came to the water. The Lord is saying, hey, the promised land, the place of freedom, the place of victory for you is on the other side of this 10-foot deep, 14-mile wide river. And I want you just to go stand in it. And I know you can't swim, and I know it's flood stage, but just go stand in that river. And if you were an ancient Israel who happened to be one of the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant, you would say to yourself, oh, crap. Are you kidding me? See, here's what, I see the freedom of the Lord over there, the victory, the blessings, the abundance. It's over there, but my goodness, I got to cross this thing? I can't cross this thing. It's too big for me. It's over my head. It's too deep. I can't conquer this thing. I can't do that. Whew. And I know that's how some of you are feeling, right? I mean, I've had my addictions and I've had my depression, and sometimes life feels like a raging river at flood stage, well over your head and 14 miles wide, and you can see it, but there's no way you're going to get to it. And so the God of our story, the God who's telling them and us to say no, to go says, just go stand in it. Just go stand in it. And at first read, you're thinking, that's kind of cruel. It's kind of mean. And we actually see this carried out through the scriptures. Whenever there's an obstacle in front of God's people, often the Lord will say, I see that thing that's bigger than you, badder than you, tougher than you, stronger than you. I see it, and I want you to go face it. See, but God, he doesn't understand how we Americans work, because if we see something that's bigger than us, stronger than us, insurmountable, you know what we would do? Ooh, I see that there. I'm going to go this way and hope it doesn't get me. But you know, when you run from that thing that's bigger and badder and stronger, it's always going to catch you. There ain't no running. There's no freedom when you run from it. So in the scriptures, throughout the scriptures, even in our text in Joshua 3 this morning, God says, don't run from it. See it and go stand right in it and put your feet in the waters. And so back to the text in Joshua chapter 3. Choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And get this, as soon, somebody say as soon. As soon. So this, if you were a priest and one of the 12 who were supposed to carry the ark and pick up. If you're one of the priests, the words as soon would make you go, whew. So as soon as the priests who carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. Next slide. So when the people broke camp to cross, you know, let me just stop right there. So God gave them a promise. He goes, I want you to go stand in the raging waters that are keeping you from the victory and the freedom that I have for you. But as soon as you take that step of faith and put your feet in the waters, I'm going to do something, because you're going to have the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant, remember, is the presence of God. When you face that fearful thing in the presence of the Lord, when you don't run from it, but you face it and you just take one step, as soon as you take a step towards it in the power of God and the presence of His Spirit, God's going to begin doing something amazing. You see, the text that we just looked at didn't say, as soon as you step in the water, you're going to have to learn to doggy paddle while carrying the Ark of the Covenant. It'll make a great movie in about 2,000 some years, right? No, he doesn't say that. It's just as soon as you take a step in my presence towards that which keeps you in bondage, I'm going to do something. And so we continue to read. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priest carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage, right? I've already told you that, all during harvest. Yet as soon, somebody say as soon. As soon as the priest who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the waters upstream, what did they do? Somebody tell me. You got it right there. What did they do? Stop flowing. That's enough right there. and the waters downstream kept going, and the waters upstream stopped. And the people walked across inexplicably dry ground into the promise and the blessings the Lord had for them. You see, you got to say no to grow. I'm thinking that the Israelites and the priests in particular, the ones out in front, were scared to death. They were so scared to walk into the promises that the Lord had. See, the Lord gave them promises saying, I'm going to be with you in the midst of the streams and the flood. I'm going to be with you. And there's freedom for you on the other side. He gave them promises. And I'm sure in the midst of the promise, they were scared because a promise is one thing, but deliverance is another. But as soon as they took a step of faith, listen to this, listen. As soon as they took one step of faith in the presence of God, the promises were filled and the blessings unleashed and the miracles happened. But they had to say no to the fear that held them back so that they could grow into what God intended them to be, which was people living out the promises of the Lord. So you got to say no to grow. So I wondered a few minutes ago, you know, what do you got to say no to grow into that which God would have for you? I'm specifically now wondering, what fear do you need to say no to so that you can grow into the person God would have you be? Because fear says, stay on the other side. The water's deep, you can't swim, it's flood stage, and it's way wider than you can handle. If you say no to fear and you take just one step of faith in the presence of the Lord, amazing things are going to happen. I'm thinking right now of Albert Einstein and Kung Fu Panda. I said Albert Einstein and Kung Fu Panda, as I'm sure you are, right? See, I've said this before, you know this. The definition of insanity by Einstein is to do the same thing again and again and expect different results. That is insanity. If you keep doing the same thing that you've always been doing, but hoping for a different result, that result of freedom, even though you're doing the same thing, you're just insane. You're not any closer to freedom. And then Kung Fu Panda. Kung Fu Panda, his name is, what's his name? Po. I'm a little disappointed that y'all didn't know his name was Po. I know you did. Way to go. Po was given a task by Master Shifu, the diminutive yet powerful in presence, Red Panda. Master Shifu gave Po a task that Po could not accomplish, and Po felt silly and stupid and even trying, and he said, why did you tell me to do this? I couldn't do this. And Master Shifu said, here it is, listen. If you only do that which you can do, you will never experience the amazingness of doing something new. That's pretty good from a cartoon movie. If you only do that which you can do, you'll never experience the amazingness of doing something new. See, that's just another way of saying you got to say no to grow. So what do you need to say no to? So that you can grow into the person God would have you become. What fear do you need to shake off and say no? So that you can grow. So we have 6 more weeks to talk about saying no so that we might grow. Now, again, let me remind you that I'm talking about us saying no, but it's not because God wants from us. He wants for us. And when we say no to certain things, we position ourselves to receive the things the Lord has for us. So from here on out for the next 6 weeks, I'm going to talk about a concept. I'm not even talking about today, just telling you what I'm going to talk about. Of the spiritual disciplines. That's certain things that we can do by way of spiritual practices, by religious practices, things that we can do that kind of help us say no to things so that we can grow into the person God would have us become. The disciplines, the spiritual disciplines that we're going to be looking at in the weeks to come are ways that we can do what the Israelites were told to do, ways that we can consecrate ourselves, way that we can kind of separate ourselves from the old so that we can walk into the new. So you got to say no to grow. And when you grow, your impact increases, and your freedom abounds.
Thanks for listening. For more information, check us out online at theriver.info.